Good morning. I'm Kieran O'Donnell, and you're welcome to Business Matters. Coming up in today's programme, back behind the wheel, bus tour operator Joe Mangan says he's optimistic about the future as the country continues to ease its way out of lockdown. And the lifetime in livestock. We speak to Anne Harkin, manager of her Faux Livestock Mart, about her 31 years at the heart of the famous Trading Point. I'm delighted to be joined by Joe Mangan of Mangan Bus Tours. Joe, good morning, and you're very welcome to Business Matters.
Thank you very much, Kieran.
Joe, 2 weeks of business done after coming out of lockdown into the third week. How are things and how's business?
It's good. It's a bit like the old phrase that has been thrown about so much now. It's good in terms of the new good, in terms of what we would have expected in the middle of July. We would expect to be rushed off our feet halfway through a busy season at this stage. But instead of that, we've got one bus running in our local service, run between Godahawk and Letterkenny. And when I say good, we're carrying probably around about a quarter of what we would have expected to be carrying this time of year, as it's an established one. We've been doing it now for nearly 20 years, and it's been built up over those years, carrying everything from students to the LYIT, shoppers, workers, people going for appointments, and just people just going for a general social aspect of getting out to Letterkenny for the day. And we're seeing people are slowly, and I mean slowly, coming back to it and getting into that.
Okay. And I suppose as a result of that slow pace, Joe, you've adopted the approach of a small step policy in terms of getting back into some sort of normality again.
Yeah, the service one, when we restarted it, there was a bit of nervousness. We were getting a lot of requests and a lot of people asking that they were really missing the service. So we were a little bit worried that there would be too many because of the restrictions on social distancing and capacity and public transport. But that didn't materialise, and the numbers are growing gradually and quite slowly. Good in one way in terms of getting us back into this new norm and getting used to the thing, but not so good in terms of the viability and the overall sustainability of the service. But we're in consultation with the National Transport Authority at the moment in terms of getting a support package for that service, because they are recognising that service is a vital link in terms of socially for, you know, we're classed as an area of economic disadvantage here in West Donegal, and this service provides a vital link, not just for, you know, you have students and you have the workers that I mentioned, but it's this big social aspect, and it can often be the only social interaction that people get. They come on the bus, they know the people, and they've got their little groups that they look forward to meeting each other, whether it's a Tuesday or whatever day they travel and so on.
Yeah, I suppose you talked there, it's just the routine that people had, I suppose that was taken away from them. And now that, I suppose, working towards getting that sort of back again, Joe, is very important. And as you say, more so in the fact of your service to a rural area.
It is, and it's everybody's routine, from ourselves, our drivers and our customers. We were all thrown off the tracks, as it were, and our routine of seeing those regular customers on. And we could have nearly predicted half our load on any given day that would have been our regular travellers, and they would have known similarly who would have been on along with them and what day they travelled. And there was a great education of life driving that run, because you learned so much from the people that were on it. There were some great conversations, some great discussions at times, and the laugh, the scene, you know, all sorts. But it's a very enjoyable job, to be fair.
Yeah, just in terms of the coach and bus tour sector, it affects so many parts of life, and it's involved in so many parts of the day-to-day activities. There's the wedding parties, stag parties, concerts, football matches, tours. So you're involved in so many things that go on, and a lot of those things are people's things that look forward to, activities or breaks or whatever.
It is, and it quite often there's terminology used like the tourism sector and the transport sector and this and that. And I think quite often the reality or the what that really means to the people on a personal level can be lost in that. As you said, this time of year could be anything from a stag weekend, a hen weekend, the actual wedding transport for guests. It could be concerts in Dublin or Belfast. It could be football matches, Donegal matches, hopefully, in Clonus or Croke Park at this stage. It could be senior citizens' days out, like so that we do some of the day centres and some of the activity groups, and that our own tours, or again, our day tours that would take predominantly foreign visitors and Irish people, but around places like Glenveagh and Slieveleague, Glenconkill and the likes of that, Fanad Lighthouse. All of those things are where those people in those local communities were used to seeing us come into Glenveagh on a Tuesday and Thursday and Sunday, or Slieveleague or Glenconkill the other days and so on, or, as I said, the concerts and all that. And while there's a lot of people now as cars, there's still a lot of people that through different times use the bus and that part of it, that link, particularly here in northwest Donegal. Maybe I'm in a bad position to say, but I think we're quite fortunate that there have been a strong tradition of family-run coach businesses that have built, to be fair to them, a lot of them in this part of the county would be as strong as any coach operator in throughout Ireland, and a lot of them would be well respected throughout the country. And they've served that need, that void that was there because of the lack of maybe infrastructure and transport and so on. We're delighted to be part of that. I grew up with this, and it's something that I've been doing since I was knee-high. It was a great pleasure if I got away on the bus with my father. So that's all part of it.
Yeah. Just take us back, Joe, in terms of how Mangan Bus Tours was, I suppose, initially established by your father.
When my father started, he was in Scotland in the 60s, and he started with a transit minibus in 1965, taking workers to and from work on that, and he continued to work on that. He actually took a trip to Milan in 1970 for the European Cup final, and a huge journey to undertake at the time, but like as all, when you're young and you're kind of, you've got that sense of adventure, you just go for these things and you seize the opportunity. He moved back then, moved back here and started the regular service from West Donegal to Glasgow. And himself and my mother would have built up the business. Predominantly that was the main run going back then days, and would have then done everything of local work with terms of school runs, and predominantly a lot of disco work, the football matches in the summer, and that would have run, a lot of local stuff, really.
Yeah. And from an early age, Joe, you yourself were involved, I take it?
I was. I used to enjoy, if you got away for a day, whether it was going, my father used to do the school run on the Monday and Friday for the boarders from here to the Royal and Pryor and Raffo, and we used to enjoy going away on that one if you got away. Similarly, when he would have been involved with Glen A, and I would have got to go on a Sunday to some of the matches, and different, as I say, some of them are going to Larne or going to wherever, and I just developed that interest. I enjoyed it, and I suppose I found myself, much as I thought halfway through, say that I said, look, I want something a bit more normal. The hours weren't the best at times, but I found myself being drawn back into it because it was what I knew and what I enjoyed, and thankfully I kind of went back into it and I've enjoyed it, to be fair.
Right. It wasn't a straight transition, straight in, Joe. You sort of diversified for a while after you left secondary school and went on to college.
I went on to college and I did kind of went into the motor industry but did a bit on that, and probably, as I said that I had done my bit with the buses and wanted something more standard. But after about a year and a half of that, I just found myself looking through magazines, seeing what coaches were for sale, and decided to buy a coach. Where we are, there was a lot of, just very competitive on the local private hire market and that. and a lot of the schoolwork was tied up. So I kind of decided, well, look, let's try and get into something just to step away from the very fierce competition part of it. And that's when we came up with the touring part and started doing, putting together our own coach tours. And it's interesting because, you know, when I was in school, I didn't really have, I had actually no plans to even, my plan was once I get to the intercert, as it was at the time, that's as far as I'll be going. And there was I still remember the day I got my intercert results, there was the bus driver at the time. He became a great friend of mine and a fellow that learned me an awful lot. Patrick Harkin, he was driving the bus around in the beginning. And I remember that day when I was coming back in the bus, he asked me how I got on and I told him my results. And he said, that's fantastic. He said, that's a great foundation for you to build on. And I remember the first time that I thought, oh, maybe I could carry on in school. I was thinking this was me. And that little statement that day kind of encouraged me to carry on. And then I went on and went to college and did the motor industry management and transport engineering and so on. And later on, the first tour that I did, Patrick actually was the person that was teaching me again. Patrick had been guiding and had done some tours, and Patrick worked with me for, and still does, on our tours. And it was interesting, as I say, that little word of encouragement that day, whether he intended or meant it or whatever, was actually that little spark that kind of, as I say, gave me the encouragement to say, well, maybe I should look at carrying on.
What was it like setting out at that stage, Joe? I mean, it was a whole new, different area for you to say, I'm going to start up myself now, and following the steps of your father, and at the same time, diversify to some degree.
Maybe I did it at a good stage of my life where you had, you know, I was in my early 20s, early to mid 20s, good kind of, you kind of take things on and you just run with it. And I was quite fortunate that the thing went quite well for me. And then in 2002, we took over the Letterkenny service that we're operating now. Again, I was always very, very lucky. I always had great people around me that really did probably as much, if not more, of the work than I did. And similar on that Letterkenny run, my uncle Paddy, he built that run. He drove that run for 16 years until his illness there a couple of years back, and unfortunately lost him 2 years ago. But you had people like that guided you and kept you right, and were a huge help, as I say. Similarly, myself and Patrick would have built up the tour program together. And then my wife Catherine would have done the office end and would have come from the accounting background and would have kept was a very good force in the office and would have been that where I lacked attention to detail, she would have been excelled in that and would have really made sure that if a customer had a special request that it was noted and it was reminded to me the morning I was going away on the tour to make sure that was done in the hotels and or wherever it was. And that was the thing about it, that it wasn't just me, it was the whole group of us. And as I say, when you're lucky to have good people cross through your path and come along with you on a journey like this, and running a business is a bit of a journey, pardon the pun, an hour situation, sure. But it is, and you know, you need those people. There's nobody, I don't think there's anybody in business that could say they did it themselves.
Yeah. Listen, during the conversation with different business people over the last number of weeks and months, most, if not all, have used the opportunity to sort of take a step back and reassess how they run their operation and how they do things. I'm sure you've done something similar yourself, Joe.
We have, and there's a little part of me that nobody would be kind of thankful for COVID, but there's a part of it that in terms of time with family, in terms of time with switching off from the stress and the pressure of running a business, particularly in this time of year for us, we had a fabulous break from that. I had a fabulous time with the family, with just doing things. We're fortunate to live in a beautiful place here in Donegal. We live in Ardsmore, just outside Godahark, and we got to just enjoy our own company and the area that was around us, and just simple things where you weren't, you know, wasn't right. Your head wasn't buzzing with thinking what organises everything in place, and just being able to really take it at a different pace. That was good, and I really, really enjoyed that. It was actually difficult getting back into it, to some degree, if I'm honest. But it's good, and I think we'll gain from that. Nobody's going to gain overall from COVID. Maybe I'm always a person that's just glass half full, and I take any positive that I can get. And that was a huge positive. As I say, I would have had time with my family and would have gained in terms of the deep relationship that I would have formed even with some of my sons and daughters, and that you would have actually spent quality time with them where I was focused on them and didn't have the distraction of business and what was going on in my life. Similarly, they didn't have the distractions of their clubs and sports and activities and all the things that was going on in their lives. And maybe in a way it forced us to together, and I know that I've gained just an enormous amount in terms of that you couldn't buy.
Okay. I do know, Joe, you're an optimist by nature, and you did mention the fact that you're very much a glass half full person. I suppose, looking down the road in terms of what do you see for the future for your own industry, your own sector, and the Irish economy in general?
I think we're on a long road. I think anybody that thinks that this is kind of the start, we're back on and back on the road and back to kind of getting things right. We're making progress, but I believe this is a long road. I believe in terms of our business, I don't think we'll see 2019 levels in our business until, I would say, 2023, maybe 2024. 2020 is going to be just totally wiped out. We have around about 80% of our business has been just totally cancelled and gone for the year. Will not come back for 2020. A percentage of that will come back next year. I would expect around about 50% or so to come back next year. And then 2022-23 is when we'll start to see it come back properly to levels. Now, we'll have to adjust, we have to manage and realign our business to those levels, but maybe it gives us a time to think and say, you know, what were we doing too much? Can we manage with less? Can we manage more efficient, more lean? I do think that 10 years ago, the recession, the lessons of that is possibly standing well to us in terms of we had to learn and realign that time. And it doesn't guarantee anything, but it leaves you in a stronger position. As I say to people, I'm still in this race, and I feel that the lessons of 10 years ago is leaving me in a strong position in this race and in terms of where we go. In terms of the overall for the economy, I think it's going to take some real radical new thinking, and I'm optimistic in terms of how I'm seeing things already from that side. I'm delighted to see things like where they're extending the wage subsidy scheme, because they're realising that if we don't extend that, we're only going to drive people onto the live register. It's going to cost the same, and we're going to be paying out in the long run. So thinking outside the box and not just having it where one department clears their desk and is essentially passing it on to another department. So I'm hoping that there are, we need strong leadership, and we need, I think the one thing that we do have in this country is we will have a huge buy-in by the people, by the business community and the Irish public. We need some good incentives, some good thinking, because there's a tough road ahead. This all has to be costing a huge amount of money, and that money isn't just coming off a money tree. That has to be balanced somewhere down the road. So I think it's going to be a tough and long enough road ahead, but I think we've shown, you know, as I say, what happened in the crash 10 years ago, and we've seen Irish businesses come back so strong. I think we're going to do it again, and that's the huge resilience of the Irish people, and nowhere is that stronger than here in Donegal. We've had the challenges with border and fluctuations in sterling. We're just coming out of a long, protracted Brexit thing that we thought this was going to be the big factor this year. That's still to come. But the business community here are so so strong. I've enjoyed being part of the chamber there 11 years ago when I was president. I'm still part of it, and see a group there where we support each other. And in times like this, if that group can only be a crutch for each other to get ourselves through it, that's an important role as well.
And that was Joe Mangan of Mangan Bus Tours. I'm joined on the line by Anne Hargan, manager of Rafoe Livestock Mart, one of the country's premier marts. Anne, good morning, and you're very welcome to Business Matters.
Good morning, Ciarán. How are you?
31 years at the East Donegal Co-op Mart in Rafoe, and 20 plus of those as manager. I know we'll talk about current situation shortly, but just take me back if you could for a minute and how you started with Rafoe Mart.
Well, Ciarán, I applied for a position in Rafoe Livestock Mart in 1989, and it was the secretary's position, and I was up against a lot of competition apparently at the time, people a lot older than I would have been at that time, probably more experience as well in the field of agriculture. But I was surprised. I had surprised myself, actually, that I got the job, you know, as secretary. And I suppose, looking back on it now, I had a kind of this mad notion that this I was going to be sitting and typing letters, and sure it would be grand. And I didn't foresee what it was actually going to be.
Okay.
It was a lot different than that. In fact, I don't think I even seen a typewriter from the day I came in here.
Right. So I'll go back to pre-social media days and in terms of how we communicated. I do remember getting your reports sent through on the fax, which is a big invention in the late 80s, early 90s, in terms of the weekly reports from the Rafoe Mart.
That's so, correct, yes. We would have given our report for our sales and the prices, which would have been, the paper then would have been the only aspect of people getting, you know, the reports then, sure, and finding out what the market value of cattle and sheep would have been.
Yeah. Had you any farming background yourself, Anne, before you went into the position?
Prior to marriage, no.
Right.
My husband just keep a small dry stock farmer.
Okay.
As a hobby. He was a psychiatric nurse in St. Connell's, and prior to that I had no knowledge whatsoever of any livestock.
Okay. And the late John Witherow was the manager at that time, Anne?
He was, and I had a committee then. Wally Reynolds was big on the committee at that time, and the late John L. Vance was the chairman, and I had Joe Maxwell, who was a big showman. He was a sure old showman, and I had John Woods. He was a farmer here from Rafoe as well. Those were the gentlemen that were on the committee at the time that I took over. But their confidence in me, which to this day I'd be very grateful that they placed their trust in me, because it is it's a very challenging job, and it's a very responsible job, and I don't think people actually grasp the responsibility that's involved with it.
Yeah.
You know,
10 years as secretary, and then I suppose to switch then to the manager's role, that was a big step for you, wasn't it?
That was another shock, actually. John Witherow said he was retiring, and he wanted a manager, and he actually put forward my name, that he thought that I should have taken this position, that I was well ready for it and well capable of doing it. And that's really how that came about. Like, I mean, I knew the ins and outs of Walmart at that stage, and I knew the customer base. I knew what needed to be done, and rather than bringing in a stranger, I think, you know, they thought, you know, we'll stick with it to see. And I mean, it worked out. Everybody got behind me, everybody helped me, and everybody put their trust in me, and here I am.
So just in terms of the makeup of Rafoe Mart, it's cooperatively owned, and isn't that right?
Yes, it's owned by shareholders, I'll tell you. Rafoe Livestock Mart will be celebrating our 60th year next year, all going well. There was a few men got together here in Rafoe Town, and they were belonging to Rafoe Development Committee in 1959, and they initiated the idea of building a mart in Rafoe Town to take away the fair days. And it was eagerly encouraged by everyone in the attendance at that meeting, I think, that was held in Rafoe at that time. So a few people got together and they decided they would go around the different areas. Convoy, Newton, Cunningham, Carrigans, St. Johnston, Rafoe. Actually, there's some from Letterkenny as well that would have been shareholders here.
Okay.
So what they done is then they generated £1 shares.
Okay.
So you were able to buy £5, like say five shares, £1 each. So that's the way they started it up. They started the mart up with, I think, less than £1,000 at the time, which was possibly quite a lot of money, way back in 1961. So that's the way it started up,
right.
You know. And
in terms of a committee or management, and what is that broken down?
I have a management committee of 28 from all of those areas that I'm after mentioning. Now, there's a representative from each of those areas, or maybe two representatives. It depends on the size of that area. And there would be two representatives maybe from each area on the board of management, which there is 28 people on that board of management. Now, that is condensed then to a subcommittee, like an executive committee of six or seven people that help to run the mart on a daily basis, or I report back to them every week. We have meetings every week to talk about what needs to be changed or if there's any problems has occurred. So that they're voted on every 4 years onto an executive committee by that 27.
Okay.
By the 27 members that's on the board of management. The board of management meet twice a year, and then they have their say, and then the executive committee and myself bring it back here, and we try to work through what they have proposed for us to do, or changes we have to make, or on a daily basis.
Okay.
Our weekly sale is a Monday for sheep, our weekly cattle sale is a Thursday, but in between, at the peak periods, we would have breeding ewe sales, which would be possibly night sales, breeding ram sales. And then we have weanling calves come September, October, when you have a flood of cattle, like, you know, when you're trying to keep the smaller cattle away from the bigger cattle. So, I mean, most of the men that buys the weanlings are working. So you try to have those sales at night. You know, they're part-time farmers now too. I mean, needs must, and they have to work for a living harder than most people now, because farming now doesn't keep, unfortunately, it doesn't keep the food on the table for most of the younger farmers. This is where I feel that the banks and all have, the financial institutions, I think, have let the farmers down big time. And, you know, they don't place enough of trust in the farmers. I feel that they need more financial assistance. They need to be trusted more. I don't think any or many farmers would have done financial institutions much harm. And I would feel that the banks have just maybe, they need to ease off a wee bit there and give a wee bit of fluctuation there with regards to giving them stocking loans, which will be paid back. I mean, there's been no problem with that. I can't envisage a problem, because when they sell on their stock again, I mean, those loans will be paid off. Another thing that I would feel very strongly about is that I think that the farmers are taken for granted by a lot of people. Rural Ireland in general is taken for granted. I think there isn't enough done for rural Ireland. There isn't enough done by the government either for the farmers. I think the emphasis on farming is not taken seriously enough. I think they're the backbone of Ireland. The economy doesn't evolve around Dublin, which, mind you, if you were looking at the media all the time, you would think it did. I mean, rural Ireland is what this economy is made of, and it isn't emphasised enough.
Is there any one thing that you think could be done to maybe help the industry or the problems you outlined at the minute in relation to the farming sector?
Well, I do actually think that the government needs to do more. I mean, I'm not taking a swipe at, I'm not politically minded in any way. I'm not one party or another party or any other party. But I think the government is too laxy-daisy with regard to the firemen. And they take it, as I said before, they take it for granted that the farmers are an important aspect of Ireland anyway, and rural Ireland. We have lots of farmers in the country, lots of farmers in the country, and they do not respect, I think, the fact that they work long hours. They have, they're not like you and me getting a week's wages at the end of the week. Those farmers have to wait until they're ready to sell their stock before they have their income. So they haven't the same income as you and me on a weekly basis. They may get it surely whenever their stock's ready, which could be 5 or 6 months down the line before they, you know. So farmers are taken for granted in an area where they need to be thinking, what can we do to help these farmers? What financially can we put in place to help farmers who are nearly, like, they're nearly on their knees, some of the farmers, you know. They're trying their very, very best to stay with it. And machinery end, like machinery, they need diesel, they need lots of help in the field of maybe trying to keep going on a daily basis, and they need financial help too on a monthly basis, not on a 4 monthly basis the way that they're getting it. So I think lots of things could be done, but I think they are taken for granted. And I do think the governments so far have really taken them for granted. And the only time that we ever see politicians, I think, in rural Ireland is when they're out canvassing, looking for votes. That's the only time, to me, that's the only time that we're important in rural Ireland, is when they're looking for their votes.
COVID gaelings, I do know they had a serious impact on how you run your operation over in Rafo. May I talk to me a wee bit about that?
Well, things were bad before COVID, but things is worse now. I mean, stress levels are high. Everybody is on edge. We've had to put in a special operating procedure into the Department of Agriculture. We have a yearly license with the department, so, I mean, there's recommendations there that we have to adhere to all the time, rules and regulations that we have to adhere to prior to COVID. And now we have this special operating procedure to adhere to as well, HSE guidelines and everything to follow. It has been a major upheaval to the cooperative marts, to marts in general. And I would say it would be an oversight to say that no manager in the country is under pressure at the moment, because we all are. We have to now, we're responsible, like, for the people who are on the premises, the workers, number one. We're responsible for the people who come onto the premises, and we're responsible that they all look after themselves and that they are all adhering to the safe distance, the 2 metre rule. And there's people that don't get into the mart because we just don't have the accommodation. We're lucky. We actually had to move all our business from our main ring. We actually made a new ring down at, we have a big wide space down at the bottom of our mart, which was a penning area for cattle, and we turned that into an arena and a seating area. So at the moment, with social distancing, 2 metre, we can get in up to 60 people.
And what would have been your capacity before that, Anne?
The capacity before that, we could have held maybe 150, 160 people. Like, I mean, that was shoulder to shoulder in the old ring, like, you know, in the main ring. Yeah. And, I mean, it wouldn't have been any different in any other mart. Like, farmers would have been shoulder to shoulder in every single mart in the country. But now we are only able to get in 60 to 70 people.
And is there a possibility that maybe more mart days will be put on as a result of maybe fewer being allowed access in then, or is that something you've looked at?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I can't see that happening. You know, every mart in the country has a day They have their own days. And to start to do that, you're going to mix men farmers up. Farmers know the days that, like, you know, we have Stranorler, we have Anishon, we have Milford, we have Donegal Town here in Donegal. Like, we have those. We have.
Okay.
They know the days that all those marts are on. So, therefore, you know, if they don't get to Raphoe one day, they'll go to Stranorler. If they don't get to Stranorler, they'll go to Donegal Town. If they don't get to Raphoe, they'll go to Milford. If they don't get the Anishon men, they'll go to Anishon. So, I mean, I cannot see, at this time of year, thankfully, it's a quiet enough time for cattle, you know, so I can't see that happening, really, at this time. September, I could, from September on to November, that possibly might happen.
Okay. Just in terms of prices, Anne, how are prices compared to other times of this time of the year?
Do you know this, that sheep at the moment is unbelievable? In fact, like this last 3 weeks, sheep has gone through the roof. Like, you know, there's a high demand for sheep at the moment. So sheep's very good. Cattle has been excellent as well since we reopened. And the prices in general are good, which you have to admire. Somebody out there is doing good.
Okay.
Somebody out there is doing good. So, no, everything is good at the moment, and the prices are holding up well. The trade's excellent at the moment for all stock.
Good. In terms of the lockdown, how long were you closed for over that period?
We were closed up until from March to June. We got open again on the 8th of June.
Yeah.
But during the lockdown now, I mean, I just thought a lot of people had a lot of stock at that time because they would be looking for cattle to put out to graze. And that would be a buying time for men looking for the smaller animals to put them out onto grass. Now, what I done was I tried to match make, really. I tried to, like, if Farmer A rang in to say, I have 5 heifers, you know, small heifers, 300 kilos, or 5 bull sterks, 300 or 400 or whatever kilos, I tried to match him up with a buyer. And I would have arranged a time for him to go at a time that suited the seller to view those cattle, and maybe they would come to an arrangement with regards to price. And listen, 9 times out of 10, it ended up those cattle were sold. That man bought those cattle. He was very happy with them. So, I mean, we put through about maybe 400, 500 cattle at that time. Like, so that was a good plus.
Okay.
You know, it got the men who wanted to buy for their grass, it got them away, and it got the men who had those wee calves, it got them freed up. So it was good to be able to help out there at that time, like, as well, because that's a peak time for those type of cattle.
Okay. In terms of looking down the road, Anne, are you hopeful that things will get back to normal sooner rather than later?
I can't see any form. Listen, I hope I'm wrong, but I can't honestly see any form of things improving in the next 3 to 4 months anyway. I think they're all governments and everybody is holding their breath waiting on the second wave, but which I hope doesn't happen. But I think people have to be cautious. They have to respect the rules and regulations that are there at present, and it's to protect people. They have to understand it's for their health, it's for their benefit, it's for the people that they're going home to. So I would like things to get a bit normal again, but I would like people to as well to be a bit more responsible for their own actions, you know, take it seriously instead of taking it, well, sure, listen, it's over, it's coming, or it's, you know, people have become a wee bit laxy-daisy, and I don't think it's the right time to become laxy-daisy. I think we have to be cautious. We have to know that this is a virus. This is here. It's possibly here for us to stay. So I think, you know, the precautions have to stay in place. And, you know, the safe distancing, I think, is vitally important. And I know that isn't going to be a plus for a lot of marts because they haven't the facility maybe that we put a facility in place that has said 60 people maybe could get in around our arena. A lot of the marts around Donegal and around the country have only access for 20 to 30 people. But the vital importance of that is that you're not standing beside anybody for 2 to 3 or 4 hours that you don't feel safe. Like, men stand and march for maybe 4 hours, 5 hours at a time. And to stand at 1 meter, or to stand at even less than 1 meter, to me is not a safe environment again. And, you know, I think it would be wrong. And I know I probably get an awful lot of flack for that, but I just don't think that it's correct at the moment. While this virus is there, it shouldn't be that we should go down to 1 meter, which is possibly going to come. And maybe on the 20th of this month and in the next phase, they probably will pull it back to 1 meter. But to me, that is not a safe environment. I mean, I would not actually like, while this virus is still active, I would not like to see men shoulder to shoulder again, standing round a ring for 4 to 5 hours.
That's it for another edition of Business Matters. I'd like to thank my guests, Joe Mangan and Anne Harkin. I'd like to thank Kenneth Wilson on sound. And thanks to you for listening.